Hey, my name is Brian Golden. I'm the lead pastor of Centerpoint Church, and I just want to personally thank you for listening to our podcast. And I also want to invite you, wherever you are around the country or in the Tampa Bay area, to join our digital online campus at centerpointfl.org. And here's what you need to know. Our vision is to create an alternative to church as usual for all people. And all that means is, regardless of whether you've been a longtime follower of Jesus, you're new to faith, you're investigating faith, or you don't even know what you believe, our goal is for you to feel like you belong, even if you never believe. And so thank you again for listening, and I hope today's message encourages you and helps you.
Good morning, Centerpoint. How are we doing at 11 a.m.? Awesome. Thanks so much for being here. My name, like Angela said, is Bradley Hamilton. And I know that I know a lot of you, and I know some of your stories. But the reality is there's a lot of you in the room that I don't know you. I don't know your story. I don't know your upbringing. I don't know what led you to this moment. I don't know the ups and downs that you've had in life. But if we were to go around the room and we were to share those stories, okay, don't worry, I'm not going to make anyone do that. But if we were to go around the room and everyone were to share their unique story, what led them to this moment in time, I think there would be some things that we would actually have in common. Now, our stories, they would be completely unique and no two would be alike, but some things would be similar. And here's one of those things I think we would all find that we have in our story. Somewhere along the way, you would mention in an up or a down, maybe, a person. You'd mention a person, a relationship with someone, for the good or for the bad. Because there's probably been in your story a person connected to maybe some of your worst moments, maybe some of your biggest regrets, some of the biggest hurts that you carry. There was maybe a person attached to those. But then some of your greatest memories are probably also attached to a person. Some of the moments in life that were your favorite moments that really led you to where you are today. People, relationships, they're just a unique part of our story. And whether we like it or not, they impact our story. And they matter, especially in situations of faith. If you're someone who, like we've been talking about the series, you want to grow your faith, maybe you have a faith story of how you found faith or how you've grown in faith, there's probably people along that story connected as well. There's probably some people who maybe hindered your faith somewhere along the way. Maybe some people who caused you to dismantle or question parts of your faith. But then you might have also had people who have encouraged you in faith, and who maybe just for the first time showed you a side of faith that you didn't know, or a side of following after Jesus that you didn't know, and you're where you are today because of them. Maybe some of you, you're not sure about faith, or you're investigating, you're watching online, you're in the room, and you made some kind of step, you're here, you're checking out online, and maybe there's a reason there's a person attached to that. Maybe there was someone that you saw that's caused you to even have thoughts about faith or questions about faith. There's so many people in my story that I can point to that have been impact on my life and my faith story. There's one that I always mention every time I tell my story, and that's a guy named Dan. Dan met me when I was just a punk teenager, and I went to a summer camp when I was a student. I went for all the wrong reasons, right? I probably just wanted to meet girls, and I was honestly pretty skeptical of faith. I thought Christians were a little weird, and I had a lot of questions, and I had a lot of uncertainties, and every time I felt like I brought those up, I was sort of met with the, you know, let's not talk about that, or you really shouldn't think that way, and maybe that's was been some of your story as well, but that's really where I felt I was walking into camp. And for me, Dan just seemed different. Dan, first of all, I noticed right away he was different because he just had this like peace to him and this like just comfort and like was so kind and so loving. He wasn't judgmental to me, even though I was a little punk to him a lot of the time. And he was there as a small group leader. And even as I just kind of saw his life from afar, I already noticed like he's a good father, he's a good spouse, he's a lot of what I would want to be one day. He's serving at church, but I still just, you know, had a lot of questions, a lot of things I didn't want to open up to him about. But over time, and it took a while, especially at this camp, and I continued to show up to youth group after that just to be around Dan, to ask more questions, I realized he's a safe person. And he's someone that when I talked about my questions, didn't dismiss them. He actually seemed interested and was willing to take the time and walk with me through. And if he didn't know the answer, he would say, well, let's go on the journey together. And throughout, you know, my relationship with Dan, I ended up, he taught me how to pray. He taught me how to read the Bible. And so much of who I am today, really, I've got to credit to Dan. It was a single relationship that honestly changed the course of my life. And so I tell my small group leaders all the time, if you have a punk sixth grader, you know, watch out because you might be stuck with them forever if you're anything like Dan. That's how our relationships go, right? And they seem random. They seem just sort of pop up at some point in our lives, but they can really change everything for us. And so here's the bottom line, just to give it to you before we get going. And let me just say, this is so profound and so complex. You're going to be so thankful that you came this morning. Here's our bottom line. Your relationships impact your life and faith. Your relationships impact your life and faith. Groundbreaking, right? Of course not. We all know this. We know that relationships have an impact on us. We know that in our stories, people that we've met and people we've interacted with have a significant role in our faith and life. The problem is, even though we know it, we don't always pay attention to it. And we don't always leverage it. In fact, this really has been written about and talked about forever. In fact, at least as early as 900 BC, because Solomon would talk about this. As Solomon, the wisest man who ever lived, was given wisdom by God, he wanted to write down and preserve all of the wisdom that he had. And he wanted to pass it off to his sons and the future generations. So he tries to record all of these principles and things he's learned even for the ups and the downs of his life. And he wanted to put them together so that we could have them. What's great is that we get to have those in the book of Proverbs. And one of the things that he writes, I love this. He says, whoever walks with the wise becomes wise, but the companion of fools will suffer harm. And now some of you are going, that's really harsh that he would call people fools. Earlier when I mentioned those people that were attached to your biggest regrets, you used a much worse term. And so let's just give Solomon some credit. But his point is simply that. It's that the people you spend time with, the relationships that are around you that are closest, they have the potential to influence your thoughts, to influence maybe ultimately your decisions, and to influence maybe even ultimately who you're becoming. So the idea of your relationships impacting your life and faith, it's important. And it's a lot of why our life and faith goes the directions that they do. The problem is, when we talk about growing our faith, so let me just talk to those right now who you've locked in for this series because you want to grow faith, expand faith, maybe begin a faith journey. If you want to grow in faith, a lot of times this is not the principle that we think about. Relationships are not the first thing that we think of, oh, that's how you grow faith. We think of reading the Bible. Yeah, of course, that makes sense, right? We know more about Jesus and who he is. We think of praying. Totally makes sense. Talking to God, you know. We think of fasting, even though that's kind of weird, but if we'll lose weight, I guess we'll give it a shot. And there's other things that's more obvious. I can see how that is a way we grow our faith. But our relationships? Because our relationships, they just seem random. In fact, if you were to go through your story, even in the one I just mentioned, I was somewhere and met someone, and that's probably your story, right? You were somewhere and you crossed paths with them, right? You happened to be at this event, and then they were there too. You were somewhere, you were not looking to date, and then they walked in. Relationships just sort of seem like they happen. They sort of seem like we don't pick them, and yet they are the most significant pieces of our journey oftentimes. And yet they're the most influential thing in our lives. So we can't control them. We can't pick who we interact with. We can't pick our relationships. I wish we could. That would be amazing if from now on out you could just choose everyone else that's in your life. But I think there are some things we can begin to do to leverage this principle and to make room for the type of people that we want to surround ourselves closest with. And ultimately, that means the type of person that we want to become. So I think there's a lot of helpful applications in the New Testament letters, because what's happening in these New Testament letters to different churches is that there are these new groups or gatherings of people trying to figure out, what does it look like to apply the words of Jesus to our lives? What does it look like? Because it was so countercultural, it was so different than any other people group in any other religion, in any other culture, the way Jesus wanted them to live. And so they're trying to figure this out together through the mess, through the hardships, through the confusion and the questions. And you have all of these now gatherings or churches trying to figure this out together. And so what you have in a lot of these New Testament letters are correspondence from the pastors and from the leaders and the church planters to these groups to say, here's what we're seeing, here's what we think will help, here's what we're seeing over here, here's how we think Jesus would apply this situation. And so as we get to see all of this info in our New Testament, what's really interesting is that this issue of relationships is mentioned multiple times. So obviously they're trying to figure this out as well. They're realizing their story is affected by the people who are around them. And so what does it look like to leverage those for faith? And here's what he says. The first is the author of Hebrews. He writes this. Let us consider how we may spur one another on toward love and good deeds. In other words, we know we need to, right? We know we need to love one another. We know we need to help each other get to where we're going. And we know there are people out there who are loving and caring and encouraging. We know all of this, but let's just consider it. Oftentimes, isn't that the issue why we don't have the right relationships or friendships in our life? We're just not thinking about this fact. we're sort of stumble into this principle by accident, right? We just kind of go through life, our default, we don't actively consider the fact that maybe our relationships matter, and so we end up in one, some go great, some don't. It's sort of just a gamble. And that's how most of us live when it comes to our relationships. And yet, the writer would just say, let's consider, let's think about, let's make some active steps into finding positive faith relationships. Now again, just to those looking to find positive faith relationships, here's what begins to happen. If we don't make it a priority in our lives, if we don't actively seek it out, our closest relationships become only driven by proximity. The people who are closest to us. We look to our right or to our left, that's the person that's there. We're not actively seeking the kind of relationships that we know will help us get to where we want to go. And so we only end up with a circle of people who just happen to be around us. It's why for some of you, maybe your coworkers are the most influential relationships in your life. You don't even know them, and you don't know their story, and you don't remember their kid's name, and you haven't really done a lot of life together, but just because you're spending time with them because of proximity, they just become the closest relationships. And now listen, those are important relationships to have. You absolutely should be friends and get to know and spend time with your coworkers. You should get to know and spend time with your neighbors. You should know people in proximity to you. I'm not saying that. But if you are seeking to grow your faith, and you want to be closer, or maybe just you have a goal in mind of how you want to be in your life and with God, and if you don't have any relationships that are positive faith relationships to help you get there, it is going to be so much more difficult for you to see that goal through. We have to have people, we have to look for people and put action toward considering what we can do to meet one another and to spur each other on in love and good deeds. And this is why he says what's next. He says, not giving up meeting together, as some are in the habit of doing, but encouraging one another, all the more as you see the day approaching. In other words, he's just saying this. If who you spend time with matters, then spend time. Meet. He says, don't give up meeting together. Spend time alongside of each other. Hang out. Grab coffee. Conversate. Just choose to spend time with those that you are considering might be encouraging, might be loving, and might help you in wherever you want to go, especially if that is in faith. The truth is, this is not a neutral principle, that who you spend time with affects who you are. It's not neutral. So we have two options. We can either leverage it for our benefit, or we can ignore it to our detriment. And let me just be real. I'm an introvert. And as an introvert, this is not my favorite verse. This is not the verse, like, meet together is not necessarily one I'm, like, gonna put on a sign in my house. Some of you, this is your verse, right? You're looking to your right and your left, you're like, who's going to lunch after this? This is great. Not so much for me. For me, I love the verses about solitude. I love the ones about rest. I love the ones about staying in your room and watching reality television. There's none of those. But it's a tough one. But here's the reality. This verse isn't calling all of us to be social butterflies. It's just not. And God hasn't even built you that way, maybe. But it is to remind us that we do have to have some deep, caring, encouraging relationships. And if we don't consider it, and if we just go by default, we might not have them, and we're not going to grow in faith the way that God would have us grow in faith. So it's important. And this is why, and this is not a shameless plug, I just truly want to give you insight as to why we do what we do here. Because we are absolutely obsessed. This goes into every meeting. This goes into every conversation. We are obsessed with creating relational environments where people have the opportunity to make these connections. Because again, we can't control either. We can't choose all the people that you have in your life any more than you can. But our hope is to give you environments and give you places where you might connect with a safe person. And you might connect with a loving and caring person if you'll take advantage of it. And so here's just some of the things that we do. It's why we have all of the activities outside multiple weeks in a row. So we have bouncy houses because we want your families to connect and be known by one another. We want you to meet other people in the same stage of life. It's why we have coffee outside so you can hang out in this beautiful Florida weather that's like beautiful for this week. And then it's going to get really hot and you're just going to have to sweat next to each other. But it's why we do that. Because you can show up and listen, the sermon's great, but you can get this other places. We want you to meet or have the opportunity to meet some other people alongside of you. It's why we do small groups and kids. We actually give kids the opportunity to meet other kids and other leaders and mentors because we think this is important for every age. It's not just for us in here. It's for kids. It's for students. And let's just be honest. It might be more important for their age because what if you had had these positive, influential relationships in your life at an early age? It might have changed everything for you. And so we believe that's important to help allow happen in our kids' ministry. It's why we gather with students on a Wednesday night and we give them a fun, engaging environment that's for them. I mean, last week we played neon dodgeball, and like you might not think that's that spiritual, but I think it's one of the most spiritual things we do. Because we are giving students an opportunity, students who don't maybe naturally connect with one another, who maybe are more comfortable behind a screen, to begin to meet people who have the potential to change their life just like Dan changed mine. It's why we're taking them to camp, and this one is a shameless plug. Right now, we are registering students for camp, and so we would love for your student to attend. And we would love maybe for you to even consider sponsoring it, allowing them to have this moment, because you just heard in my story, it is these moments and these opportunities where they have the potential to meet someone who could change everything for them. A relationship, a friendship, a mentorship that could change the trajectory of their life. And that's why we do it. It's why we have young adult gatherings, because in the season of life where it's so difficult to find people who are like-minded in the same spot in life, like it's so challenging. And so it's why we have our young adults gather and meet together. That's why we do groups. Because we really think that if you get alongside some other people, not in a row, but in a circle, and begin to actually do life together, we really think that life is better together. We want to give you opportunities to meet some people who just might change everything for you. We can't control it, but we hope to build the environment, and we hope to give the opportunity. And if you take advantage of it, I think that God could make something happen in a relationship or a random meeting that could change everything. But it's gonna take action. We can build the environments, and that's all we can really do. And so I think that there are two things that we need to do that we're gonna see kind of talked about in the Old Testament. And these are really simple, I believe, and really practical. It's just kind of how I am. Doesn't mean they're easy, but simple. And so here's the first one. I think we should commit to showing up in positive faith environments. Simple, not always easy, but commit to regularly showing up in an environment where you have the opportunity to meet some positive faith people, some people who can help, some people who maybe are farther along in some areas than you are, some people who maybe who are just peers, but after the same things, show up in those environments. Now, the good news is it just really takes showing up. The bad news is it takes consistency. Relationships don't happen overnight. They don't happen by just hanging out once. They take consistency. You know this about every other relationship in your life. You know it's time spent over time spent that eventually builds into a real relationship. And so that's gonna be what it takes. And let's just be honest, the pull to not show up is a strong one in all of our lives. Life is busy, we have reasons, totally get it. In fact, Paul said it was the same issue for them. He said that some are in the habit of doing, not meeting together. In other words, showing up to church was not just a now problem and just a post-COVID problem. It was always happening. And Paul says, we just need to commit to being in these environments. So here's why we say we want you to show up on Sunday. It's not because we want you to hear us, all right? We're not that great, all right? We don't just need you to hear the sermon. We believe that it will be better for you if you and your family have consistent time throughout the week to be encouraged, to be loved, to be around safe people, and maybe to even connect with someone to your right or to your left. We just believe it's important. Also, I just want to say this too. It's not even just that maybe you need to show up. Maybe someone needs you. I mean, for my story with Dan, you know, I felt like Dan was a random encounter in my life. It wasn't random for Dan. Dan had chosen to show up consistently as a small group leader. He had chosen to put himself in an environment where he was available to other people. And that was the life-changing relationship. Maybe there's someone in this room, maybe it's a student, maybe it's a peer who just needs you. Maybe there's something you've walked through that someone else could use the opportunity to connect with and to learn from. We just need to be together. It's why we think groups are important. It's why we encourage going to groups. And hey, listen, I get this. Groups take a lot of effort. They take a lot of time. They take a lot of energy. Sometimes being in people's house is weird. Sometimes people are weird. Sometimes Christians can be even weirder. Like, I get it. And what's a common story I hear, and what may be your story, is that you showed up, you tried a group, you didn't quite connect with those people because of relationship or just personality or season of life or whatever it is. And so you've said no group works. And that's just not the case. That you did an amazing thing. You took an opportunity, you stepped out, you stepped into a consistent faith environment, and it didn't work out. It doesn't mean that none of them will work out. So I would just encourage you, try another one. You gave an opportunity, great. Didn't work out, keep giving opportunities, keep showing up consistently in opportunities, and just keep making room. And maybe as you keep making room, God will bring someone along the way that just might be a providential relationship in your life. Maybe for some, you need to just pay attention to the people around you, even right now, and the things that you like about them, the things that you see in them. For Dan, it was, man, I wish I could one day be a husband like that, a father like that, a leader like that. And maybe look at some people like that and spend time with them. Ask them to hang out. You've said hi a couple times, but you've never really spent relationship with one another. You've never really talked to them about anything. Maybe that's your next step. Maybe for some, and I don't feel like this is too much of a stretch, I think this could be the start for some people. I think for some of you, maybe your start is to start counseling. And they're not gonna be your best friend. They shouldn't be your best friend. They shouldn't be your only friend. But it is an environment that you are in consistently with someone who can help you get to where you wanna be, that can help you be healthier, that can help you feel more holy, a positive faith environment. Maybe that's your next step. And then here's the second step. And let me just be honest. This step is not one people tend to get excited about. This is usually when the crowd gets quieter than the first half of the message. But I think it's important. In fact, I think it might be the most essential part of all of this. Number two, we have to commit to vulnerability. If you just show up, but you don't let someone know you, you're gonna miss out on the power their relationship can have in your life. And listen, all of us tend to do this. Me especially, I think we all have this in us. We want people to perceive us a certain way. We want people to look at us and admire us for accomplishments and how great we are, and we kind of want this image projected to the world. And so what we do with the gap when we realize it's not fully us is we cover, and we wouldn't say it this way, but we pretend, and then we wonder why our relationships aren't fulfilling and transforming and impactful. It's because you're not actually known. In fact, the danger of living this way is that it might work. You might get a whole bunch of people who know you a certain way, but they don't know you. And relationships can absolutely transform your heart. They can transform your life. They can heal you. But they can't transform the you you're pretending to be. Just you. So to make this work, we have to not just show up, but we have to commit to, in these circles, begin to let down the guard and let down the facade and maybe be willing to risk letting a few people in. Another New Testament verse that was written to really help Christ followers figure this out was written by James. And I'm sure this wasn't the easy one to write for him, and in fact, it's misused a lot in modern church culture, go figure. But here's what he says. Confess your sins to each other and pray for each other so that you may be healed. Now, a lot of times people tend to kind of preach this incorrectly, and they sort of preach it like, you know, if you confess your sins, you'll be forgiven. That's not what he's saying. Forgiveness is what happened when Jesus died in your place. Forgiveness is something that happened between you and your heart with God, and Jesus, with nothing that you had to do with it, died for you. So that you could experience forgiveness, that you could experience wholeness. His forgiveness doesn't waver, it doesn't change. You don't have to make sure you're confessing enough to him so that you are forgiven enough. That's not how Jesus works. You are forgiven. He knew everything you would do. He loves you anyways. That's between you and God. He says, and this is James, not me, if you want healing, maybe healing for some brokenness that happened because of a relationship somewhere along the way, healing for a hurt that just continues to plague you, healing from some shame or guilt that has been brought into your life somewhere along the way, healing from something that someone said, maybe even when you were a kid, that you just can't seem to move away from, healing from, you know, church trauma and something that maybe was given to you or told to you that's not even true about Christianity, but it's just lodged in your heart. James would say, again, not me, if you want that, that comes from vulnerability with other people. If you want to see healing, it comes from taking a risk, stepping out, and letting some other people know you fully. Here's why this is a risk, and I don't have to tell you this because you know it. If you've ever been hurt by someone, if you're like over the age of 3, you probably have. Your brain, as a way to protect you, has said, I don't want that hurt or I don't want that discomfort ever again. It's a good thing. In so many ways, that serves us well. Our brain avoids discomfort, it avoids hurt. The problem is, it doesn't always decipher well on what the actual issue is. Because instead of saying that person was the problem, your brain tends to say all people are the problem. Instead of saying that situation, that circumstance was the issue, your brain tells you when you opened up, that was the issue. And so if you just don't do it again, you're safe. Problem is, it's not true. And the more we shut down, and the more we close up, the more we push people away, we actually miss out more and more on relationship, and we miss out on healing that can really only be done in that context. For me, when I first started ministry, I was 18 years old, which depending on the church, I don't necessarily recommend. Because I was young and I was leading with other adults, I had a few what I might call, saying this in love, Christians, decide to insert themselves pretty harshly into my life, make assumptions about me because of age and whatever. And for me, and now I get it. Now I realize they probably had some trauma. They probably had some experiences. I had my identity way too wrapped around what I was doing for them with good intentions. And so it just felt like an attack to me. But what it did to me unintentionally is instead of realizing that there was an issue with that one person or an issue in me in that moment, whatever it is, I began to think, and I wouldn't have said this at the time, I began to think, okay, church people are the issue. And maybe you've felt this somewhere along the way. Church people are mean. Church people are harsh. Church people don't give you enough grace and understanding, and they just kind of attack you. And again, wouldn't have said it that way, but that's how my brain interpreted it. And as a young kid, leading in a church, not liking church people wasn't the healthiest. And for me, I just decided, okay, I'm going to have my job here and my life over here. And obviously, that didn't work out. So as I began to learn, and luckily I had some amazing men and women come alongside of me and really just teach me the difference in, like, yes, people are going to hurt you, and yes, it is a risk. It's always a risk. That I can just step out in vulnerability knowing it's a risk, and yes, some people are going to take advantage, and yes, some people are going to hurt you anyways, but the risk is still worth it. Because since then, I've kept stepping out. And it's still tough, and my brain still tells me that vulnerability is an issue. And yet, you just have to keep taking the risk. The more I've taken the risk, the more I have met safe and caring and incredible people in my life who have honestly, and I'm just say this, they have helped me heal from that. But it takes the risk. And too often, that risk just does not feel worth it. And here's the deal. I don't know your story. I don't know how that person hurt you, and I am not in any way going to try and minimize that. But here's what I know. That person is not all people. There are people who are safe, who are loving, who are caring, who aren't going to judge, who aren't going to be harsh, who aren't going to treat you like a project to be fixed or a project to be managed, who aren't just going to dismiss you at the first sign that something's getting messy, who's not going to think that you have to believe a certain way in order to belong. In fact, in so many ways, this is why I'm so thankful for this church and what we do here. It's why I'm more passionate for our mission than ever before. Because when we say an alternative to church as usual for all people, it's not just something we put on a sign. It is something that we talk about in every meeting, in every conversation. It filters through every single thing that we do because we truly believe that it doesn't matter your background, it doesn't matter your history, it doesn't matter kind of how you're walking through these doors, it doesn't matter your experience with faith, your questions with faith, your doubts with faith, your anger with faith. None of that matters besides the fact that you have worth, you are significant, and you belong. no matter what you believe. And I just don't want us to give up on the fact that those people exist, because along the way, someone wasn't like that. And lastly, I'm gonna close here, but I feel like this is essential to mention. Vulnerability really starts at the core by knowing you're accepted. And maybe your pushback to being vulnerable has been, if you were to be honest, you don't feel accepted. You feel like because of a mistake that you've made, or a piece of your past, or a question you have, or something that's just in you or innately, whatever it is, has somehow made you unlovable to people, and has somehow made you even unlovable to God. And can I just say, I just want to read one thing before we go, and this is a statement made by Paul. And why Paul's significant is because he started out killing Christians. And he was doing this because, you know, this guy Jesus showed up and he claimed to be God. And to Paul and to many others, that was just blasphemy. And so he actually gained a little bit of a following, and there were all these kind of people following Jesus. And so just like any other cult, any other movement, they thought, how do we end this? We just killed a leader. Works in every other area, so let's kill the leader. That's what they do. They put him on the cross and make it incredibly visible for everyone. They are murdering him, torturing him. He is dead. They thought that would end it. And it actually backfired. Because now hundreds of eyewitnesses, not just because they were told, not just because they read something, they were eyewitnesses because they started walking back out into the streets and saying, we saw you kill him, and we met him again. We saw him alive. He said it was going to happen. Now it has. So I guess thanks for killing him, because he's back alive and we just believe. And now what was so crazy is they weren't hiding anymore. They weren't scared. They were more bold than ever. Didn't matter the persecution. Didn't matter the threats. None of that mattered. They were so convinced. Eyewitnesses. We saw it. So he is who he said he is. And so Paul just really had to get ahead of this. And he thought, now if there are more and it's spreading like never before, let's just kill all of them. And so he started doing that. As one history professor told me, he almost single-handedly made sure that Christianity was not in our history books. We have never registered anything that we talk about today. And yet, as he's murdering the men, women, and children who would claim the name of Jesus, he claims, Paul, he says he meets Jesus just like everyone else had said. And for Paul, it wasn't a decision of comfort. It wasn't a decision of logic. He was just so now convinced, like everyone else, that he gave up everything, gave up his affluence, gave up his leadership, gave up all that he had built, his reputation, and he traded it in to run from the same people that he was leading for his life, a life of torment, a life of torture. He was just that convinced. But here's what it cost him. Can you imagine the ridicule, the things people said? As he walked through the door of their church, and is that Paul who just killed my family? I mean, he couldn't hide his story. He couldn't hide his reputation. He couldn't hide any of his mess. It was on display for everyone to see. And then can you imagine just the internal turmoil that he was going through? The guilt, the nights he would probably stay up and be taken back to those moments of what he was doing to those families, the shame. And yet here's what Paul wrote this. And if Paul wrote this, it just gives me so much confidence. He says, therefore, accept each other just as Christ has accepted you. Paul could say, regardless of my label, regardless of what they say, regardless of my past, I am accepted. Can I just tell you, I don't know who this is for in here. That's you. And that thing you keep bringing up that thinks disqualifies you from God's love, he does not see that. He sees forgiven in the name of Jesus. That past mistake that you can't get past, that thing that person said that you feel just marks you, you need to know that what marks you is the fact that God has looked at you and he said, that's my workmanship. That's my prized possession. I put them together the exact way that I want them to be built. I love them. I am for them. I am passionate about them. He loves you so much that he sent his son to die for you, knowing the mistakes you had made, knowing the missteps you would take, and he wants you anyways. He is obsessed with who you are. He loves who you are. He has hope for you. He has purpose for you. He has forgiveness for you. That is who you are. You are accepted by a heavenly Father who thinks the world of his creation. That's who you are. Fully known in all. And so all Paul is saying is, can't we just do that for one another? Man, what if we just love like that? No conditions, no pretext, no one's to be cleaned up enough, no one's to ask all the right questions. We just love, we just give grace, we just walk together. And here's what's amazing. It doesn't mean that God just wants us to stay where we're at in all areas of life. He wants progress for us. He wants you to thrive. He wants you to be healthy. He wants you to be whole. But the avenue to do it is to know you are fully accepted and to bring alongside some other people who know they are fully accepted and together attempt our hardest to accept one another no matter what, to know one another fully, to be known fully, and to do this thing together. That is where healing happens. That is where transformation happens. That is where power happens. And so I just end with what if. What if we decide to commit to that? What if we decided, yes, we can't choose everything, but we're going to make room. And we're going to build in moments and times of consistency in our life where we show up around positive faith environments. And we're willing to get vulnerable and to be known by some other people. And to do it all with the truth in mind that we are so accepted and so loved. And let's do the rest together. Let me pray for us. God, I just thank you for everyone in this room. I thank you for a church like this who truly believes these words of Paul. And I thank you for the person maybe in the room who is invited, watching, stumbled in, and this is what they've been praying for. That's what they've been hoping. And God, I thank you for the fact that you are revealing that it is possible, that there are those people out there. And God, I just pray you would help us to, one, just know how accepted we are by you. From there, God, help us deal with the messiness and the difficulties of doing life together. But just being able to accept one another, to encourage one another, to consider how we might just continue to help and love. God, I just thank you for what you're doing here. It's your name I pray. Amen.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this message or have been impacted by Centerpoint Church in any way, would you consider helping us out in one of two ways? First, if you would just spread the word, share this message with your friends, family. Maybe you could go rate and review our podcast on your favorite podcast catcher, but this helps us so much more than you know. And secondly, this ministry is supported by people like you through their financial generosity. And so if you've been impacted by any of these messages, would you consider giving to support the mission and vision of Centerpoint to see people reach with the radical grace of Jesus? You can give today on our website at centerpointfl.org. And again, that's centerpointfl.org.